Hey, what's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of Call to Serve podcast. I am your host, Reggie Hubbard. If you haven't gotten a chance, please go like, comment, subscribe, share, all that jazz. It really helps support our mission of serving those who serve others. Of course, you can listen to us at anywhere you like to listen to your podcast. Also, Call to Serve podcast can also be heard on Reach Across America Radio on Sundays at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can find Reach Across America Radio on the iHeart Radio app, the Odyssey app, and the TuneIn app by searching the word Reach. With us today, we have a very special guest, a man of many talents. He was in the Army for 10 years and served through three different deployments. He participated in the Paralympics of 2014 in Russia, and he's the founder of the Military Broadcast Radio since 2005. With me, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Joel Hunt. How are you, my guy?
I wouldn't say all that, but hey, thanks. Appreciate the introduction. You made me feel special.
You are like special, my friend.
I'm in the rope and gym class, so thank you for that.
Let's go. How are you doing today, brother?
I'm doing good. How are you, Reggie?
Hey, I'm alive, I'm awake, and I feel great. You know what I mean? I live a life I don't deserve, but I'll take it anyway.
That's all you can do.
So, Joel, I just want to, again, thank you for taking your time to jump on our podcast. I know you're a busy, very busy man, and I appreciate you setting some time aside to have a conversation with me today. If we could just start off by just giving us a little bit about your background, you know, growing up, what got you to the point to where you are now?
Well, I would have to say that, you know, as soon as I graduated, I remember going over to a friend's house that had just graduated. We played football together, you know, and I thought I had my life all figured out. And, you know, I remember going over to where he worked. If you remember Chi-Chi's, you know, that doesn't show you my age. I don't know what doesn't. But when I went to Chi-Chi's, you know, he finally got off work, and I went over to, you know, his apartment stuff. And as soon as I walked in there, I mean, you know, like, people are going to do what they do. You know, they're going to smoke weed, they're going to drink, all that stuff. But, you know, as soon as I walked into that apartment that he had, I saw lawn furniture as home furniture. And, you know, I've been around the block. I know how that is, you know, and I'm like, okay, you know, I don't want to go back to something like that. You know, so I got scared, and I was waiting on acceptance letters because I was a pretty good kicker in high school.
Yep.
I didn't get any acceptance letters until after I went to basic. Then the acceptance letters came in. My mom was like, oh, well, you definitely, you know, joined way too early before, you know, that was happening. But you know, I don't want to be a 21-year-old living at home. I always usually say, you know, 21-year-old reject living at home, but because of today's society, the way things are going, that's not really appropriate because now, I mean, it's just so hard with, you know, the economy and society today, you know, but back then I didn't want to depend on my parents because you don't want to depend on your parents, you know, it's just that. It's kind of the thing as a man, it's very hard for you to swallow your pride and ask for help. And so I didn't want to ask for help. I wanted more to life than what I could with my parents. So I joined the military. And then as soon as I joined the military, I did my time there, and That was the main reason. I would love to tell you that I joined, you know, after 9/11 or, you know, give you an inspirational story, but I didn't. I joined in 98 because I got scared of what my future was going to look like. And even though I got hurt, I still have a pretty good life, you know?
Yeah.
I have a lot of people that support me, and I was raised right. So it was very important for me to make sure that veterans didn't struggle like I had to, because that's struggling. That's hard. And once you've struggled to the point where, you know, you've ate a half eaten hamburger out of the trash, you know, and, you know, after you get done eating it, you know, you go over to the corner and, you know, you start crying because, you know, this is what your life is. I don't want another veteran ever to feel like that.
Yep. That'd be tough. You know, I've never had to, you know, be in that situation myself. But
we all make mistakes, and I've made a lot of them in my past. And, you know, that's, I live by saying tough times don't last, tough people do. And, you know, everybody makes mistakes. It's how you grow from them. That's what counts. It doesn't count how high on the mountain you get. It counts on how many times you get pushed down, but you just keep on pushing up.
Yeah. I like that. I like that perspective. Thanks for sharing that. 100%. So I do have a few questions for you. My first question is, because I know in your bio mentioned that there was TBI. You know, you had a, yeah. You know.
Had yes, that. I am not drunk, I promise.
I didn't think so. The first question is, what were the early days like navigating life with a traumatic brain injury, and how did you find the will to keep going?
You know, I think the hardest part of the struggle was having a traumatic brain injury and trying to explain to other people how it felt, or what you had to endure, or what you have to do. For example, you know, we all do it. Okay. We'll all be driving on that road, and on the side of the road, you'll see people, like, you know, with signs, you know, hey, you know, I'm so water, I'll clean your windshield, or, you know, or flowers or something. And I think a lot of us, even though we don't say it, a lot of us kind of judge, like, oh, what's this? But then when you find yourself in that position in your life, and then you correctly counter from that, it not only shows you how the struggle is, but you know how it feels. And you don't want anybody ever to feel like that. And we do. We tend to judge other people. You know, if we go in like Big Lots and somebody comes up, you know, and they're like shaking and stuff like that, the first thing you think of is, okay, this person must be on drugs. Or just maybe they have a brain injury. Maybe they're enduring trauma that, you know, you finished your trauma. You know, you got through your trauma. Yeah. Maybe they're still going through yours. They're going through theirs. And I think a lot of people, they're very in a rush to close the book on people, rather than kind of like, okay, why did they do this?
Why do you think that is?
I think even in the military, I think you have some kind of trauma while you're, you know, in grade school or high school or even college. I think the military just adds on to it. The military, with like the stress and stuff, it just takes that one little thing to trigger something. I don't necessarily think a lot of us have trauma in the military, a selected few, but I think we carry over the trauma that we're raised in, especially if your parents were divorced or something like that. That's still trauma, you know, because that affects the way you interact with friends, with family, with other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I think a lot of people have experienced things before going into service, and then maybe their service can amplify those things while they're in the military, and that just stays with them when they get out, which can cause an array of problems and issues and things like that. So yeah, thanks for sharing that, man. So my next question for you is, and I really want to talk about, if you don't mind, let's talk about the Olympics. Okay. I know, what was that like, for you? Like, okay, I'm going to the Olympics. I'm going to the Olympics in Russia, you know?
Well, I really didn't put two and two together, you know, with my brain injury. I mean, I didn't think it was so big. You know, everybody kept saying, oh, this is your goal. That wasn't my goal. My goal was I couldn't afford skiing, and I found this new activity that was really fun and that made me free as a bird. But it's so expensive. But they have so many like grants and so many like learn to ski camps for military that I took advantage of it, because at that point, you know, the VA was getting ready to put me in the Fisher House nursing home, and my parents gave up everything to help guide me in that light, you know, because I was in a wheelchair for about a year and a half, having to sit down and stuff because, you know, nobody knew anything about TBIs, you know, blackouts, dizzy spells, you know. You get blackouts when you get too hot, or, you know, can't regulate your temperature. Like, I'm like finding this stuff out. Because when I got hit in 2004, nobody knew anything about traumatic brain injury. You got hit, what did they do? Hey, how many fingers am I holding up? Oh, yep. You're good, dude. You're not bleeding. Come on, suck it up, you know?
Yeah.
But that's just how it was. I considered TBIs like AIDS in the 90s or AIDS in the 80s, where, you know, everybody was scared about it. They talked about it, but they wasn't really affected. They didn't really know about it. You know, it's easy to be a friend with somebody with TBI. It's also a lot harder to dealing with, like, I want to say their outbursts or their triggers or, you know, their way they deal with trauma, the way they deal with life. I have a friend in this room. I don't know how many times we've unfriended each other because, you know, it's that point of view. You know, she looked at it and then I looked at it, you know, rah, 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 you know, but she understood. She understands my TBI, and it's very, very hard to find somebody that can deal with that. People say, oh, I can deal with it, but then it's kind of like saying, oh, I'll never bail somebody out of jail. Don't say never, because you're going to come to an instant in your life when something like that happens and you're going to be eating your words, because unless you've been in that position, yeah, don't judge, because it's totally easy to say something and then experience it.
Yeah. Yeah, never say never, for sure, because you just never know. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, I'm just thinking about, had you been to Russia before? What was that like on the flight over? I mean, how does that even work?
That was crazy. So I had to help my dad because, you know, of course, the Paralympic Committee, the USOC, they're not gonna pay for like failing members to go over. They'll pay for me. But to get an airplane ticket, you had to give them a fake hotel registration number. And then to get a hotel, you had to give them a fake airline number. You couldn't get one without the other. So it was, I don't know how the USOC did it, but they told us, hey, you know, put this on hold, and then, you know, then we go with the flight, but you couldn't get one without the other. It was crazy. I'd have to ask my dad how they did it, but it's not a very easy country to go into. And once I got there, I knew how serious it was because, you know, when you tweet or when you Facebook a post, you know, your thoughts or whatever, you know, you don't think about it going viral. And like I wrote, and there was nothing wrong with it, but you know, when you're used to maybe like 30 people watching or listening to your tweets compared to 5 million, that kind of scares you. And you're like, okay, maybe I'll just stay off social media for a while. But when I got there, like we're always an assumption that Russian people are hard or mean, you know, fist of iron. And that's not what I saw when I got there. I saw many people that were very curious about Americans, but they wouldn't look you in the eye because they felt ashamed because they couldn't speak English. And it's like, are you kidding me? You guys know another language other than Russian. I don't know shit. I just know English. I failed Spanish, you know, but that's not how they look at it over there.
Mm.
And they were ashamed. And I'm just like, you guys shouldn't be ashamed. But they was.
Yeah.
And they were so nice over there. So nice. I really enjoyed my time over in Russia, the time that I got to spend there. In fact, like, I was really upset when I went over there because I only got one event. But it was kind of a blessing in disguise because when I did that one event, you know, used to when I just do the ski hills and stuff, you know, if I wrecked or something or if I disqualified, I'd disqualify, you know, maybe 50, 60 people watching. Oh, no, we're talking about 5 billion people now, you know, all over the world watching, you know.
That's heavy.
You know, don't wreck. Don't mess up. Don't cross the streams.
That's heavy.
So it was fun, but I didn't realize how big of a platform it was until I was already there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does perfectly. So let's talk about some of your biggest victories and what they mean to you.
I would say my biggest victory is, you know, I had a gentleman, he handed off, so it used to be called Military Brotherhood Radio, and that was established in 2005. It was just an audio, you know, DJ. And after a while I was, you know, being a DJ, and I'm like, okay, I want to do the, you know, the talk host thing, because I wanted to show veterans all the programs out there beyond the VA. I had a distant cousin reach out to me back in 2008 when Obama was in office, you know, when the big thing government shut down, you know, when that stuff came up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a distant cousin. They're like, well, you know, my fiance's National Guard reserves and he's worried about no pay due. And I'm like, well, you realize that there's more than just one nonprofit out there that can help you. She's like, oh, I didn't know. And I'm like, oh. So then I'm like, okay, I wouldn't say I found my niche. I felt like my struggle could help other veterans before they get to that struggle. You know, why have other people go through the same that I did if I can help them so they don't have to? That's the hardest thing. Like my wife even started creating coloring books, and we're making a cartoon of these three little ducks that are going to show veterans how to qualify for their their benefits, you know, how to do a VA loan, how to just get their benefits and get signed up with a VSO. If you're a veteran and you don't have a VSO or you have no idea what VSO means, then you need to get a hold of this Call to Serve podcast so that they can set you up with one, because you have to have it. There's no, you don't have to, you have to. I'm telling you have to.
100%.
Don't go in to the party by yourself. go in with somebody.
Oh yeah, VSOs are extremely valuable resources. I've used a VSO before, and for, you know, I kind of had to find that out just by exploring and what, you know, what a VSO was and, you know, how to access them. But once I did, it was smooth sailing from there. They literally show you how to do whatever it is that you need to do.
They help you. And, you know, the biggest description or the biggest help that I can give any veteran is, hey, you just got out. You're looking for a VSO. Go to your VA regional center. Walk around. Meet. You know, there's nothing to say that you can't meet these guys. Just have a conversation. Look on the back window. Do they have a bunch of awards? Do they have a bunch of thank you letters? That's what you're looking for. You don't want somebody that's just doing a 9-to-5 job. You want somebody that has passion. If you find somebody that has passion, they're going to help you.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So in reference to the Olympics, you know, what did the podium mean to you? Not just as an athlete, but as a veteran reclaiming purpose.
You know, I hate to say this, but I mean, winning and stuff was nice, but it wasn't really ever like super important to me. What was super important to me was I doing as well as I could to present the United States. I mean, I got a chance to represent my country again. I mean, how many people can say they can represent their country and in fighting and then representing their country and, you know, doing an honor? And then I'm really thankful that I got the opportunity to even help veterans go through the same path, because in the military, it's almost like everything's a secret. Well, we're in the civilian world. Everything shouldn't be a secret. Mm. You know, if you want to be a Paralympic person, or if you want to be an Olympian, or if you want to be a football star, if you want to be a like the next Joe Rogan, or if you want to be anything like that, there should be a step-on-step guide for people to do that, because there are people out there that have no navigation, no help at all, and they're going to be the next Matt Rife. Mm. Or they're going to be one of these people that are just going to blow up because they have that star in them. Somebody just needs to push it out of them.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, that's real.
Is able to do whatever they want. You have to find that right person to ignite you.
Mm.
And that's what I like to think MBR does. It ignites you, you know, it gets you that fire up your butt kind of thing.
I think I love what you said. You have to find the right person to ignite you. And I can definitely see how giving veterans a voice, right, can ignite that initiative, because the reality is whoever listens, there's going to be a lot of people listening to podcasts, right? But I may not be able to reach everyone. It's the same, right? Same as you, right?
Just like a football coach.
Yeah.
Some football coaches are good on some teams. Some football coaches are terrible in other words, you know. He was a football coach for the Texans, and then he didn't do so hot, and then came to the Denver Broncos, and then they went to the Super Bowl, and then, you know, it really depends on, like, you know, what team, what people will buy into what you're selling. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, I think you definitely just kind of answered my next question, but I want to ask it anyway because you may have something additional to add. So next question is, you've created a space for live radio gaming, cartoons, and podcasts. Why was it important to offer such diverse outlets for veterans?
Because I'm taken care of, and it depressed me and it made me upset when I had battle buddies and other people that I knew that committed suicide.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, man. That's one of the worst feelings that you can never feel, especially as a brother or sister in arms, is when you get a call that one of your brothers and one of your sisters took their own life.
And it's even worse when you get hit in combat and they die and you never got that chance to help them. And you think to yourself, well, you know, if I was in that spot, if I was in that Humvee, I would have been able to permit that, you know, or fix that or stop that. And, you know, every veteran has some kind of regret. Every veteran has some kind of story. But, you know, when it hits you like that, you can't fix tomorrow. You can't fix yesterday. You can only fix tomorrow. And I'm still trying to fix. Now I'll never be able to shake off all that regret, but that's okay. That's all right. You know, Rob Williams said one time in one of his quotes that it doesn't matter how much money or famous you are, it matters how much of the impact you have.
Mm. I really do like that. You know, I say this quite often, but it's such a powerful statement, I believe, and I personally believe. But they will always remember how you made them feel and how they experienced you and the impact that you made, right? I just think that's so powerful, man. Thanks for sharing that. Thanks for sharing that, man. So, what are some daily habits or mindsets that keep you grounded and focused on your mission?
I know it sounds stupid, but I really love working with other veterans to creating their shows, to kind of carve it, you know, because instead of me just doing my show to help veterans, the way I look at it is we've got 50 shows on our network. We have 50 shows that are doing the same thing that I want to do with my shows. And if you have 50 people doing a show that's helping veterans, and they're not worried about the, you know, agenda, money, or anything like that, they're literally trying to help veterans. You feel like you're contributing instead of taking away.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's see that. 50 shows, huh?
We got 50 shows. Yep. We've got 30 shows on talk. We've got about 5 shows on audio. We have 5 shows. Now, they don't always do their shows. Let's just be frank. They don't always do their shows, but they have that ability. They have that time slot, you know, and we have some gamers, you know, some gamers that, you know, go on their thing, and we're still working this cartoon thing. We're still looking for veterans that are interested in doing animation. We're still looking for veterans that are interested in teaching other veterans animation. You know, I mean, like I said, that's the one great thing here at NBR is you're a part of a team that does care, you know. And I always tell veterans when they come in, hey, look, there's a chance I might be calling you at least once a week. Just check up on you. Just say, hey, man, you doing your show today? All right, what are you doing? Let's help you promote it, you know. As long as you have somebody that you're talking to for at least 8 minutes a week, you feel like you matter.
Mm. That's powerful. Well, you know, I have one more question for you. I think it's a powerful question. I enjoy asking it. and one day I'll change it, but not today. What might people be surprised to know about you?
Will your people be surprised to know about you? Probably. I think their first thing would be, like, when they listen to the interview, you're going to have people be like, oh, this guy's fake. Or you might look at me and they're like, wow, I want to do what he's doing. Or he has a great idea. You're always going to have somebody tell you, oh, they need to do this, they need to do that. You know, just like if, you know, you believe in God or, you know, have faith, you can sit there and tell somebody about, you know, what God has done in your life, or, you know, talk to them about a relationship. But what I challenge you to do is, instead of talking about it, reflect it. Be about it. Don't talk it, do it. You know, if you're not at an event helping other veterans or other nonprofits reach other veterans, but you're saying, hey, I'm doing this to help veterans, you know, speaking, don't help veterans when you're in the spotlight. Help veterans when you're not in the spotlight also. That's the one thing that I would say.
100%. Well, thanks for sharing, man. Before I let you go, I do have something for you.
Okay.
And we'll get it sent out to you. You know, we'll get some information for you. And, okay, you know, the team will get together and send it to you. But what I have for you is a custom Call to Serve podcast challenge coin.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
I love
thank
that. You know, and I don't, well, actually, can you hand me that right there? Yeah. So I couldn't leave without telling you this. I'm going to send you. Now, this isn't what I'm going to send you, but it's kind of equivalent. I'm going to tell you why MBR is all about the ducks, okay? I'm going to send you a duck, okay?
All right.
And the reason why we do the ducks is because, as a veteran or just as a person, when you have something that you can put in your pocket or put in the shelf, and you can say, okay, you know, I got this. This means that if anything goes bad, you know, it's like water runs off your head, like, you know, like water off of a duck's back. You can weather any storm. You know, the person that started this, she did like the Jeep thing. Her name was Allison, and I can't pronounce her last name. But while she was going through a tough time, I don't know if it was cancer or what, I'd have to read it again. But she was going through something, and she gave these ducks to make people smile, because a smile can change the attitude, can change the atmosphere within 30 seconds of anybody. And when I give people the duck, that's the veteran, that's the people know. You know what? Yeah, I might feel like my life is right now, but it always gets better on the wake up. And since, you know, I'm a failed suicide of, you know, 2022, I can tell you that no matter how bad things are, it always gets better the next day. You just have to wait for the wake up. Trust me. I don't know why it's like that, but that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Don't ever take your life because of a misunderstanding or because of some kind of drama when the next day things might play out.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. So yeah, we'll definitely get this sent over to you. On the back of it, it has our mission, which is serving those who serve others. And what I want this to be, and I hope that it'll be, every time you see it, it just reminds you why you answered the call many years ago and why you continue to answer the call, serving people through media and different outlets. I also have a sticker for you.
Right? Nice. So,
yeah, you can do whatever you want, whether it put on a laptop or a water container or whatever, you know, it's yours. But also, just to be another reminder,
appreciate
just it. Always continue to serve. You know what I mean? I admire your sacrifice. I thank you for the many sacrifices that you made. you have a story to tell, and I'm glad that you're telling it. You know, I just want to say once again before I let you go, hey man, thank you for your service. Charlie Mike, continue the mission. You know, you are loved, and I'm only a text or a call away, brother.
I appreciate it, Reggie. We'll get you on my network. We'll get you on my network. I love what you're doing, and I appreciate what you're doing.
I appreciate that, brother. Well, until next time.
Until next time.